Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Lloyd Clark, whose new book is The Commanders, The Leadership Journeys of George Patton, Bernard Montgomery, and Erwin Rommel. We go to Patton at war, but surprisingly not at war in the Great War on Europe. You will remember that the U.S. did not enter that war until 1917. However, Patton in 1916 found his way onto the expeditionary force led by John Pershing into Mexico. What's striking about this, with all the time they had on their hands, is that Patton wound up making what he called a vehicle attack on one of Pancho Villa's lieutenants, Julio Cardenas. And surprising to me, Professor, at this point, Patton has this imagination that I'm going to be a hero. And he kills the man. He shoots him dead. He launches the attack. Did the death in any way show up in his writing to his parents at this time? Did he pause about it? Shooting a man is different than imagining it.
I don't think it preyed on his mind at all. This is a man who, from his first days in the army, sought action, sought to be a hero, and was willing to do whatever it took to be successful, however that might be defined. And just getting onto the expedition to Mexico, he was not backwards in coming forwards. He was always innovating. He was always pushing the boundaries. And therefore, he recognized that he would have to take risks, and that if warfare was about anything, it was about defeating the enemy. And if, therefore, somebody got in his way and he had to kill him, that was just the price that people paid. And he was willing to be the person that pulled the trigger when it was required.
And he gained fame at this moment, at least in the newspapers. He was dubbed the Bandit Killer. He was also someone already preaching cavalry tactics, which I write down as mobility, boldness, and aggression. They haven't invented the tank yet, but he's already talking like a tank commander.
Yes, absolutely. It seems to be that the tank was just waiting for him to embrace. He was a man that really understood the power of the media right from the outset, tried to put himself in the spotlight so when an opportunity arose, he could exploit it ruthlessly, as he was eventually to do with the tanks.
August 1914, Bernard Montgomery is deployed with the Royal Warwickshires. He's an adjutant in the 1st Battalion of the 4th Division, the 18th Brigade. They're deployed against what they believe will be a short war because Germany's overwhelmed with enemies on the east and west. However, the Germans, as we know, make the dash towards Paris and overwhelm the BEF. What remains of the BEF is it's fractured by the German advance and the French inability to hold it until just in time. However, what's significant here is that Bernard Montgomery is a brave young man who leads his platoon with his sword waving, completely out of date, a sword waving against troops that are armed with automatic weapons. And he's shot. Is this when he shot in the chest, Professor, the lung wound, and shot again in the leg? And he's left out there in no man's land, badly wounded. What are his thoughts that he writes down about that time out there when he was neither alive nor dead, sort of in between the worlds?
His world was a very confused world during that period. He certainly felt that he was going to die, but he also felt that he would die having let down his comrades, because undoubtedly they would be a lesser organization without Bernard Montgomery at the helm. And although we might sort of say that sword waving was out of date at the time, I suppose what all of these leaders in 1914 felt is, how can I inspire my men to follow me? How can I give them faith? How can I give them leadership? And they would do whatever it took, even if it meant putting themselves in harm's way. And that's exactly what Montgomery did, and he nearly lost his life doing so.
I'm struck by the irony that he now, because of the wound, has difficulty breathing, and so he's given staffing jobs. It saved his life, Professor. So many of those young men didn't survive the next wave and the next wave and the next wave. And the staff work was exactly what his temperament needed. He was a man who worked ceaselessly. I imagine he slept at his desk. Are there any stories about that?
You're quite right. This is exactly what Montgomery needed. And I suppose if one looks back with hindsight, what Britain needed. It needed a Montgomery that was alive. And he could show all of his professional knowledge and expertise behind a desk. But even when he was behind a desk, and I think this is so important, one is still leading when you're a staff officer in an army. You have still got to lead from that desk. The way that Montgomery did it was to make sure that he worked extremely hard and got out to see the troops. He worked extraordinarily long hours. So I have to say, I don't recall whether he fell asleep at his desk, but I would have thought he probably did. I can just imagine him having been out in the trenches, the explosions raging around him, having a cup of tea with his men, going back and writing his reports and falling exhausted across his papers. That's absolutely the sort of thing that Monty would do.
Also, I'm struck by the fact that he summed up the whole First War and what the problem was for the BEF and everyone else, leadership. He summed it all up at 30 years old. That was his life's mission.
Quite so. Leadership underpins everything that an army does. I suppose one could say the same for business. If you've got leadership wrong, there are many other things that will go wrong. Get leadership right, and you're beginning to get the fundamentals to be successful. Montgomery understood that. It doesn't matter about the tactics and the machinery and the technology. If you don't have people that lead properly in the right way, it's very unlikely that an army is going to be successful.
Erwin Rommel, also in heavy combat, first in the Ardennes, first war now, first in the Ardennes, and then later in the Transylvania Mountains in Romania. What is striking about his leadership style is that he takes enormous risks more than he asks his men to take. He's a hands-on leader. It wins him Iron Cross second class, Iron Cross first class. But I thought of this as micromanaging. That's what we talk about it today. Was he criticized for it, Professor?
Most definitely. The units that he commanded were very much with his own personality in mind. He asked people to do only what he would do, and he demanded that they take risks, that they fight hard, that they fight to the death in a way that perhaps other commanders would not. And he was involved in the minutiae. He got a grip of the detail. And I think by modern standards, we would say that that is micromanagement, although one would say perhaps during the First World War, it's exactly what those troops required when fighting in such harsh conditions. They needed a role model. And Rommel was most certainly that great role model that they could follow in any conditions.
The book is The Commanders, The Leadership Journeys of George Patton, Bernard Montgomery, and Erwin Rommel. Lloyd Clark is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.